call the General Committee meeting to order. Please note that assistive listening devices for use in the council chambers are available upon request from staff in the clerk's office. Please ensure that all cell phones are turned off or placed on silent. Are there any members of council who have to disclose a pecuniary interest? Seeing none, the next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. I will read out the title associated with the item on the agenda. Members of General Committee may ask that an item be held so that it can be further discussed. Please indicate your intention to hold an item by pressing your request to speak button. The first person on the list will be given the opportunity to speak first to the item. If an item is not held, the motion is deemed to be approved on consent. No further discussion of the item will take place at the meeting. The recommendation will go forward to Council for our consideration at the next meeting. 3.1 Staff Report 2019-0268 2020 Interim Property Tax Levy. Approved on consent. 3.2 Staff Report 2019-0247 2020 Interim Borrowing. Approved on consent. 3.3 Staff Report 2019-0234 Public Consultation Building Code Service Transformation, held by Mayor Thompson. 3.4 Staff Report 2019-0201 Tax Collector's Role Adjustment under Section 354 of the Municipal Act 2001. Approved on consent. 3.5 Staff Report 2019-0191 Disabled Road Sign Policy, held by Mayor Thompson. 3.6 Confidential Staff Report 2019-0192 Personal Matters but Unidentifiable Individual Including Municipal or Local Board Employees Senior Task Force Vacancy. Kind of need someone to hold it. No, we don't. Actually, we don't need anybody to hold it. Okay. Approved on consent. 3.7 Confidential Staff Report 2019-0281 Advice that is subject to solicitor client privilege, including communication necessary for that purpose. Bylaw 2008-31 Vibration Bylaw, held by Mayor Thompson. 3.8 Confidential Staff Report 2019-0282 Advice that is subject to solicitor client privilege, including communications necessary for that purpose. Litigation update regarding the Kingsview Park at Ward 5, held by Mayor Thompson. 6.1 Staff Report 2019-0277 Proposed Code of Conduct for Members of Council and Designated Boards, held by Mayor Thompson. You're holding everything today. 6.2 Staff Report 2019-0257 2019 School Green Fund Recommendations, approved upon consent. 6.3 Staff Report 2019-0114 Animal Care and Control Bylaw Variance Process, approved on consent. 6.4 Staff Report 2019-0290 Proposed Changes to Proposed 2020 OPP Budget, held by Mayor Thompson. Nope, not held by Mayor Thompson. Any further holds? Approved upon consent. 6.5 Staff Report 2019-0271 Automated Speed Enforcement Implementation, held by Mayor Thompson. You've surpassed your limit of holds. 6.6 Staff Report 2019-0276 Integrity Commissioner Appointment. We'll hold it. Okay, approved upon consent. 7.1 Accessibility Advisory Committee Report. But he's delegating with regards to that specifically. Any holds for 7.1? Approved upon consent. 7.2 Accessibility Award for Business. Approved upon consent. 8.1 Notice of Motion Regarding Made in Caledon Blue Dot. Approved upon consent. 10.1 Confidential Staff Report 2019-0283 Advice that is subject to solicitor client privilege, including communications necessary for that purpose. CCRW Youth Center Expansion Project Litigation Update, held by Mayor Thompson. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is delegations, and I will call upon Mr. John Fleming, Integrity Commissioner, to provide a delegation regarding Staff Report 2019-0277, Code of Conduct for Council and Local Boards. Please hold all questions for Mr. Fleming has completed his delegation. And with regards to the procedural bylaw, you do have 10 minutes. And welcome, Mr. Fleming.
They have an opportunity to speak, however, briefly with you today. I think, in large measure, the staff report speaks for itself, but I would like to make a few brief comments just to hit on some highlights. There are a number of changes that affect the integrity regime in Ontario, not the least of which are some changes to the Municipal Act and to the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act. I'll speak about the more significant of those in a moment. One of the changes that's happened has been the requirement now that municipalities have a code of conduct and either have or have access to an integrity commissioner. Both of those things are new mandatory changes, but I'm proud to tell you, and I think you should be proud to remember, that Caledon was a very early implementer in putting in place a code of conduct and an integrity commissioner. In fact, I'm the only person so far who's served in that role. And what you've done in the past, both with the original code and a couple of amendments over the years, laid a really solid beginning for what's now before you with the latest update and the latest changes, some of which are required by changes in the statutes and some of which are changes that I have brought forward and staff have brought forward just from our learnings over the past several years. One of the changes is that the code, and as a result of changes in the law, now applies not only to members of council, but to members of a list of town boards and committees. And you'll see in the report that we reviewed carefully, the staff reviewed carefully with your legal counsel, which of your boards and committees complied with that definition, and they're set out in the code. Really the biggest change, in my opinion at least, in the law and in the code that's before you today is the role for the integrity commissioner in matters pertaining to conflict of interest. Previously, integrity commissioners were pretty much hands-off when it came to conflict of interest. And if someone wanted to make a complaint about an alleged violation under the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act, they had to take that to the court, which involved the engagement of solicitors and certainly cost. Now the code, the Municipal Act and the code permit someone to bring a request for an inquiry into a breach under the Municipal Conflict of Interest to an integrity commissioner. It's up to that integrity commissioner then to conduct an investigation and determine whether or not the integrity commissioner feels there are reasonable grounds to believe that the municipal conflict of interest has been breached. And if that's the case, then it's up to the integrity commissioner to take the matter to the court. That's new. So there is a change in the role in that respect. The drafting of the code of conduct that's before you today now adds, therefore, a third complaint resolution mechanism. The first is a proposal to try and resolve complaints informally. The second is an application for an investigation by your integrity commissioner under the code. And the third pertains to an inquiry. The language of the law is a little different under MCIA and a role for the integrity commissioner there. I want to say another difference between the earlier code and this one is in response, I think, fairly to some concerns on the part of members of this council about the increasing role of social media in municipal government. Some of you, I gather, had expressed some concern about that, legitimately so. The code now includes some general words about the importance of paying attention to what you say on social media, and provides a number of guidelines. Ultimately, at least until now as your integrity commissioner, I would say that one of the things you really need to realize as you use social media, which has lots of legitimate purposes, is if you say something that's a breach of the code of conduct in social media, it's the same as if you had made that same comment anywhere else and could be subject to investigation and sanction. The report that's coming forward from your council committee, and by the way, I'm really pleased to have had an opportunity to work not only with staff but with that committee on the draft, the final draft that's before you for approval, pertains to the provision of an affidavit. Early on in the days of your code of conduct, someone who wanted to bring a complaint had to file it with the clerk, had to pay a fee, and had to provide an affidavit. The fee went a while ago. What we're proposing now is that complaints come directly to me. This report coming forward from the committee and from me recommends doing away with the affidavit. That's a decision that's very much in the hands of council. My personal view is that it doesn't add a lot to the process, but ultimately, as I say, that decision is up to you. We've added some additional definitions to the code this time, defining what frivolous means, what vexatious means, what that all-important word family means when it comes to indirect conflict of interest. So I urge those words to your careful reading. We have tidied up in a few places where there has been some ambiguity in the past code, specifically in my recollection about confidentiality and just exactly how I or whoever is your integrity commissioner in the future manages confidentiality. There's also some further guidance in this revised code about the matter of what's acceptable and what might not be in the way of gifts and hospitality, and some new procedure on that. I'd like to just end with a couple of quick comments. I expect that in the new year, your integrity commissioner, whoever that might be, will launch some education and training opportunities, not only for the members of council, but for the members of the designated boards. They too are very much caught or governed by this code of conduct and all of what goes with that. For some of them, that may be something new, and therefore some training and education would be entirely appropriate. Secondly, to be candid, if I were asked for some advice today from you, which I have not been, but I'm going to provide it anyway, it would center on two things. Number one, and I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again, be careful about your use of social social media, your smart devices and all the rest of it. They can be a tremendous tool and they can be a trap. I used to say, you know, engage brain before mouth. Now it's engage brain before thumbs. So keep that in mind. I also want to say to you, I think you need to be extremely diligent about confidentiality of privileged information to which you have access as a member of council. To my way of thinking, and I'm just one person doing this work, breaches of confidentiality are right up there on the list of the most serious matters that are addressed by the code of conduct. I don't think I need to say any more about that. And I'd be happy, Madam Chair, to respond to any questions members of council might have.
Thank you. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through you to Mr. Fleming. Nice to see you, Mr. Fleming. Thank you for the good work that you've done with the committee and bringing this. You've always been good at advising us, so I think we should kind of listen to you when you tell us things. But anyway, I'm glad to see that the fee and the affidavit is taken out, because I know that when that was there, the public felt that it was a little bit onerous on them.
Because a barrier.
Sorry?
A barrier in some people's
minds. Exactly. So I'm glad to see that that's been removed, and I know that members of the public will be happy to see that taken out. So anyway, just wanted to say thank you. You've done a really good job in assisting us throughout the years and being our integrity commissioner, so you've been fair. Sometimes we may not like what you have to say, but you've always been fair, so thank you. Oh, I did have one question. And I hear this from the public, and I don't know the answer, so I'm looking to you. But is there a rule that all the integrity commissioners must be lawyers?
Categorically not.
Thank you.
We have regular discussion about that, and we come down, those of us who are and those of us who aren't, we come down, Madam Chair, through you, firmly in the middle.
All right, so we just need to make sure that our messaging around that is very clear, because I think there's a misperception or a misunderstanding in the public that an integrity commissioner must be a lawyer. So, yeah, thank you.
Mayor Thompson.
Thank you. The confidentiality, as far as there's no stronger punishment or anything for one that does leak confidential information out that could jeopardize the business of the town. There's no other teeth in the legislation. It's just it's emphasized, correct?
I'm emphasizing it because I guess in part because of my own experience, not only in this role but been in way too many years of serving in the public service. It goes to the fundamentals about good decision making and the protection of information that should be protected. When it comes to the nature of sanctions, Madam Chair, through you, for breaches, ultimately, because of the confidence you've placed in your or the mandate you have placed in your integrity commissioner to impose the sanction, it would be up to the integrity commissioner to determine what within the range of sanctions allowed by the code and your bylaw and the act, how severe the consequence would be. What I'm saying to you is, in my judgment, were there to be a breach that involved a leak of confidential information that counsel was privy to, I would consider that among the most serious breaches that I might have put in front of me.
Thank you, and I have to agree with you on that. Not having an affidavit from the complainant, and then let's say that issue is decided to go to court, does that, you know, if there's been a conflict of interest and someone doesn't, and you decide that it needs to be settled in court, would that not be necessary to have that affidavit? And I just need clarification on that. I'm not disagreeing that, take away the barriers, but I just want to know we're not compromising ourselves if we have something that's serious.
I think we need to be clear, Madam Chair, where the affidavit came into the process and does under the existing code. It's about how something gets to me rather than how it gets dealt with.
Okay.
So what it required was that I would have to have a signed affidavit, and I know, and she can certainly speak for herself, the clerk has often assisted people with preparing an affidavit. To me, it didn't vary very substantially. Even though it's a sworn document, I always relied on what people told me or wrote to me in the nature of their complaint, at least until I determined otherwise after investigating. And so I didn't feel that going through the step of completing that sworn document really added a great deal.
Okay. One more question for you. The social media, especially for committees of council, is that an education process that we're going to have with committees of council, or is it just council in general? Because I know there's opinion, but how you weigh in on it, and we've watched what's happened with hockey coaches and Coach's Corner and a few things now. It's where do you draw the line?
Frankly, the Act now calls for members of designated boards to be covered by the code or a code. The recommendation before you is that the town's code apply to members of designated boards. I think that's entirely appropriate. And so in the absence of any unusual circumstance that frankly doesn't occur to me at this moment, I don't know why I would apply that if I were your integrity commissioner in the future. I don't know why I'd apply it any differently.
Okay.
If somebody says something by means of a tweeted or Facebooked comment that, for example, offends staff or members of council or is otherwise derogatory, then that should be dealt with.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fleming. There's no other questions. Can I get a mover for receipt of the delegation? Moved by Councillor Grove, seconded by Councillor Downey. All those in favor? And we'll bring 6.1 forward now so that you don't have to sit through all the held items by Mayor Thompson. Can I get a mover and a seconder for 6.1? Moved by Councillor Early, seconded by Mayor Thompson. Are there any questions, comments, or concerns? All those in favor? Carried. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Fleming. You're excused. All done.
Thank you so much.
Unless you want to sit through all the items held by Mayor Thompson.
No comment.
Smart. The next item on the agenda is presentations, and I'll call upon Mr. David Arbuckle, General Manager, Strategic Initiatives, Town of Caledon, to provide a presentation regarding the Economic Development Strategy Project update. Please hold all questions for Mr. Arbuckle until he's completed his presentation. And I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair Ennis. This is the second time in a month I've been at the podium. It's good for me. I'll leave it to you to decide whether it's good for you or not. So, good afternoon, Council. My brief presentation today is in reference to Memo 9.1.2 in today's agenda. The purpose of this brief presentation is just to let you know where we currently stand in the development of the town's new economic development strategy. let you know what we've been hearing through our consultations, both with the business and with the business community and with residents, and also just give you a sense on timing on where we're going from here. So just as a recap, the primary goal of the town's economic development strategy is really to provide direction regarding economic development at the municipal level for the next 10 years. Just a reminder, we haven't had an updated economic development strategy. It expired at the end of 2014, so we haven't had one in a number of years. So it's a good opportunity for us to do that work. Again, really what we're trying to do is a number of key pieces. Grow the diversity of the town's business and industrial activity. Another key piece is really about informing the official plan review. One of the studies under the official plan review is economic development, so it's actually killing two birds with one stone in relation to that component. We've heard a lot of discussion at council in relation to the balance between residential and non-residential tax assessment. So one of the things that we're looking at doing through this strategy is, again, we know we're going to have anticipated population growth. With that population growth, you also need growth in assessment in relation to non-residential tax base. Assess the opportunities for growth in the urban growth and urban renewal in our commercial cores. We've talked a lot about, especially in some more of our villages and commercial cores, about what can we do in relation to improving the economic viability in those spaces. Increase the economic viability overall of the town in both the short and the long term, and then also inform the development of the annual work plans for economic development as well as other departments, because this isn't just an economic development piece. There are a number of program services within the town that we provide that have an impact on economic development, so we're looking at those as well. One of the other key pieces that isn't outlined on the slide and is actually fairly relevant going into the planning meeting tonight is you'll notice on the planning meeting tonight there are a number of zoning changes, so agricultural, the structure envelope, that some of the housekeeping pieces. You'll see some things around country inns, some of those other pieces. Those are really key from an economic development perspective as well. So keep that in mind tonight when you're going through those bylaw amendments. Is what we want to do through the strategy as well is look at some of those policies and procedures that we have that may be barriers to the type of economic development that we want in the town going forward. I'm going to change the order slightly. I'm going to go to four. So really, this is where we've been. So we launched with our consultant, the economic development strategy in July. We've reviewed a number of relevant sort of internal strategies, a number of comparisons with other jurisdictions, also looking at the economic base analysis and provide an understanding of where we are from our local and regional economy. Right now, we're just wrapping up our consultation process, which included telephone online surveys with our business community, residents and businesses, stakeholder interviews, and also a fairly lengthy stakeholder workshop. We'll get into that in a moment. And then as far as the final stage is concerned, we'll look to going into December and then through the holiday season into March and April is the final stage, which is looking at a best practice review to inform our strategy development, also the vision for the actual strategy itself, and then a detailed implementation plan with specific actions out of that strategy. So we thought there was value as a senior management team of showing you some of the feedback that we received from residents and from businesses in relation to the survey and the consultation process. So there's a lot of good news in here. This is some of the highlights from our residents. So overall, from our community survey, 89% of those communities. Actually, you know, I'm going to go back for a second. Hold on. Just to give you a for our review, for the consultation period, this is the feedback that we received. So these are all the points of feedback that we received through the consultation process. So we had 12 interviews with both council and senior staff. We had 10 interviews with local stakeholders, which included sort of community groups and local businesses. 213 responses for our online community survey, so that's the resident survey that we went out with publicly, and that represents participation from all wards. 85 respondents to our direct, we did a direct telephone business survey, so we notified our businesses that they may get, you know, called from our consultants to have direct telephone survey work done, so we served 85 responses from that. That gives us a little bit more of a detailed and rich data to work from, rather than, you'll see at the bottom, 42 responses to our online survey, which are more sort of static survey results. And then we actually had a stakeholder workshop just held in Caledon East, where we had a really broad representation from, you know, small business, large business. Bolton BIA was there as well, and then town staff facilitated that discussion with the consultant. Now I'll get to the results. So 89% of the residents that we surveyed said Caledon is an excellent place to live. Good news. And then 82% indicated that Caledon is welcoming to newcomers. So that was one of the questions that was provided through that survey. A number of services that they highlighted that they were satisfied with from a service perspective. So some of these are town town services. Some of them are regional services. Some of them are even provincial services as well. So a good mix in there. And then the respondents were also asked about what type of development growth should Caledon be pursuing. So 69% supported more office commercial development growth. 56% supported more residential growth. And the lowest part was 35% supported more industrial growth. So in our consultation with the business community, again, some really good news, I think, from the town's perspective is overall satisfaction is high. 79% of businesses surveyed indicated that they were satisfied with Caledon as a place to own and operate a business. So as far as an economic development strategy goes, that gives us a good platform to start moving forward with and some receptivity in relation to taking some action in that area. So again, asked to rate what factors businesses sort of held as highly satisfactory. Water availability, cell phone service, provincial roads and highways, healthcare, and then also local roads and streets. So those were the ones that were sort of held high as a satisfaction level. It's good to know that businesses are looking to increase their revenues and also potentially increase their or expand their businesses over the next 2 years. So as you can see, 51% of the businesses expect a total increase in revenue over the next year. That may be speaking specifically to the current economic climate in Ontario and Canada overall. And about 17% aim to expand their business within the next 2 years. And again, 68% are sort of looking to maintain their current level of operation. As far as satisfaction level on the low side, we're looking at areas like planning and development, and employment services, retail shopping, and then also transportation infrastructure, specifically transit. Now, to be fair, we were sort of implementing both the Mayfield and Bolton lines probably in the middle of some of the survey work, so the survey may not specifically reflect some of those investments that are being made currently. So again, with the business community, we asked them to rate what factors are important for the future growth in Caledon. So 60% indicated that support for small business was very important to them. So again, what some of these areas indicate for us is it's going to give us and the consultant an idea of how do we need to sort of change our services and our investments as we move forward, so to meet the expectations of the business community. So again, issues like a broad range of housing options, stronger partnerships with post-secondary institutions, things like downtown revitalization. So there's some good pieces here that were identified by the business community that will again allow us to focus a little bit more when we move forward with strategies for implementation. So as far as priorities and challenges, again identified by this by the business community, no surprise, broadband is center of both on the priorities and the challenges side. As far as priorities, they're looking for business supports, initiatives that promote business retention and expansion, innovation, supply chain growth, and also cluster development. which we found interesting. A lot of feedback about taking more of a leadership role in relation to areas like food processing and agri-food business. And then also interesting for us is, especially from the business community, is really that push for densification. So again, having higher density developments so that you're looking at more customers, more employees, and then higher, wider range of housing options for affordability. On the challenges side, we've talked about broadband, we've talked about the little bit around the transit infrastructure and what that does to ultimately affect sort of commercial development. Looking for a timely and effective development approval process. And then also, and one thing that we are sort of, we struggle with from time to time is in relation to the availability of land, because a lot of the land right now is in private ownership. So there's limited ability for access for certain types of development. So as far as next steps, in December, so right now we're working with a consultant around a best practice review. So again, that's looking at other jurisdictions, looking at ultimately what, in comparable jurisdictions, what ultimately is available to the town to move forward with and where we need to focus. We'll move forward with a draft strategy and implementation plan that will come in to staff in January. And again, we talked a little bit about what some of the expectations are coming out of that strategy. And then with our plan to move forward in March and April to council for endorsement. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chair. Just one quick question regarding conversations. And specifically to, you touched on employment lands. What crossover conversations are we having with our neighboring municipalities for ECTA? And I'm asking, I'll just give you a quick example. We had a conversation at the region not very long ago regarding kind of bordering industries and the ripple effect that is sometimes, like Brampton may allow something on one side of Mayfield Road, and then what they're not seeing is the ripple effect to the other side. So they may allow a car dealership, and then what they're not seeing is all the car dealerships coming, knocking on our door, looking for somewhere to store all their extra cars. So, you know, what conversations are we having with our neighboring municipalities where we can kind of come to, you know, some understandings or at least be aware of what we're each doing?
So through the chair, so we do have regular interactions with the economic development departments in our neighboring jurisdictions. I don't think we've done a full analysis in relation to, from a policy perspective, on where those impacts are occurring. It's something certainly that we can highlight to the consultant going forward in relation to how can we essentially do a better job of finding some more consolidation and impact in relation to those types of studies. I know on a number of occasions when we do get inquiries from businesses that we can't specifically accommodate within Caledon, we will have discussions within our neighboring jurisdictions to see if there's an opportunity. Because even if there is an investment in another municipality, that may mean spin-off jobs for Caledon residents as well. So I think we want to be as flexible as possible. Obviously, we want the investment in Caledon, but if we can't certainly accommodate, we want to see if there's an ability to be able to help that business, settle someplace, but also see if there's benefits overall to the town.
Mayor Thompson.
So I'll follow up with that. How often do you speak with, like, Brampton or Mississauga on what's going on, similar to what Councillor Downey was asking about?
Through the chair. So generally I'll work through my manager, Ben Roberts, who has the specific connections with the Economic Development Department specifically, and Ben will certainly bring me into discussions as necessary to lend a little bit more credence to those discussions. But I don't have a ton of conversations with my specific counterparts, but I leave that generally to my manager to manage that portfolio.
Okay, but we do have those conversations.
Absolutely.
Frequently?
Absolutely.
Good.
Yep.
Another question I got for you is the 12% population growth from 2011 to 2016. So obviously a lot of this stuff has come from census. You know, this is old information, and a lot of things have happened in Caledon in the last number of years. you know, since 16. Like, I mean, this is three-year-old data now. Do we have the opportunity to collect data any other way other than through census to have stuff more current than what we've got?
Yeah, through the chair. So I know we had a discussion with the consultant in relation to the data specifically to see if there are opportunities for us to be able to pull as much as possible. I know we do work fairly collaboratively with the Peel Data Center as well to see if there's an opportunity for us to be able to leverage that relationship with them from a data perspective. But I'd have to follow up specifically, Mayor Thompson, to see where we specifically stand in relation to some of the data that we're using. But I know we have had a discussion with the consultant in relation to ensuring that the information is as current as possible.
Well, you look at that, and you're especially in your MOMO and the key research economic base factors that you have here.
Right.
This is good bragging rights for mayor and council, but it's three-year-old data.
Right.
If we have it more current, it allows us to tell our story a little bit better, and that's why. And I'm not faulting us. It's just I'm just saying, what other ways can we get more current data that we can somehow toot our horn that we're moving the right direction here in Caledon?
Yeah, and through the chair, so we've had a number of discussions internally within economic development to ensure that we are using the most appropriate measures as it relates to measuring our outcomes as it relates to the efforts that we're making from an investment perspective. So those conversations are ongoing. I would tend to agree with you that we tend to rely pretty heavily on dated census data. And it may mean that we need to make a stronger investment in relation to more specific data and specialized studies within so that we can better tell our story in relation to those investments.
Yeah, if there's any way that we can find those tools to help you get it, that'd be key.
Right.
The last thing is your figure one, which is on page 7, there on your slides.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good survey. My question is, have you crossed that over with our council work plan to see how everything ties together?
Through the chair, no, I have not. But
I'd just be curious to see what that would look like.
Yeah, I think it's our intention, actually, is when those recommendations come forward from the consultant, is actually to match that against the council work plan to ensure that there's consistency in relation to what council has asked us already to take forward as far as staff initiatives and see where there's some synergies between those
Thank you.
Pieces, for sure.
Councillor Groves.
Thank you, through you to David. Thank you for the presentation, David. Just a couple of things. A couple of things that concerns me with Bolton, and I know that I saw something in there about development of the downtowns. Downtown Bolton, you know, we talk about business retention and expansion and growth of businesses. So when I look at downtown Bolton, and it's been like this for years, and I think over the years it hasn't gotten better. Instead, it's actually kind of gotten worse. What is our plan for downtown Bolton in terms of business retention or even bringing in new businesses downtown?
Right. So through the chair, that's essentially why we're doing this. Part of the reason that we're doing this economic development strategy is to ensure that we have the most valid information and the most up-to-date sort of tactics and strategies as it relates to all components of our economic development, including as we mentioned in the first slide, is that addressing our urban cores or our village cores, so with downtown Bolton being one of them. I think we've talked a little bit about even taking some of these implementation pieces, looking for the consultant to give us that advice, and then specifically addressing downtown Bolton and looking specifically what we can do in order to address some of the challenges in relation to downtown Bolton. So again, it's a bit of a wait and see as it relates to the strategy, because I'm a big believer in evidence, and we need evidence to support action. So this is actually going to be a key piece for us in relation to providing that evidence so we can make informed decisions in addressing things like downtown revitalization.
Mm-hmm. And just to tie into that as well, the whole Queen Street corridor, that entire corridor, we need to look at it. And one of the things, and I think some of the challenges that we're running into, and I don't know how your group will be working with the planning department on this, is the fact that we've got a lot of potential along the Queen Street corridor to have redevelopment and to really make that corridor quite attractive. The challenge that we have, and I know the challenge that people are having, is the process, having to go through the process, because we've got, I think it's all highway commercial on Highway 50. So what is your department doing to work with working with the planning department to allow a little more flexibility there, to allow more revitalization, redevelopment on the along the Queen Street corridor to make the process a little less difficult and a little easier for investors that want to come in and invest?
Right, so through the chair. So ultimately, as one of the deliverables that was mentioned was looking at not only what economic development can do, but where is there overlap in relation to other departments? So ultimately, where are there barriers that are being erected in those spaces that are stopping businesses from moving forward or investment from moving forward? So our expectation is out of the study is that there'll be some recommendations on how we can move forward on specific policies and procedures, working with departments like community services, like finance and infrastructure, and looking for ways to streamline it that make things more business friendly. There's a good example that the consultant keeps talking to us about is around the CIP grant process. So again, we know in other jurisdictions they're using the CIP in different ways. There's different eligibilities, there's different criteria, and there's different processes for that. We think there's an opportunity for us, again, early stages, but we think there's an opportunity for us to improve that CIP process. Potentially, I'll have Mr. Wong close his ears, potentially increase the investment in those spaces, and then allow for that type of, facilitate that type of investment in the area. So that's one example that has come up in our discussions already.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to what the priorities are, right? So what are the priorities? Maybe Mr. Wong might not want to hear the increase in that number, but certainly I think it is a priority. And I know that Orangeville, they've done a great job with that CIP. I mean, that's where we copied. We copied Orangeville and did it, and it's worked well there. And I certainly saw, you know, I've seen over the years people that have actually applied and received grants through the CIP, and it looks very nice. They're doing a really good job down there, and you look at some of the properties downtown where they've done work through the CIP, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to afford it, and it looks good. And the one thing that I want to touch on that's really a problem, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but it is a problem, and it's been a problem for a long time, and I saw it in one of your slides, is the development process. It takes a long time. You know, when I look at how long it takes for a building permit to be issued, it's frustrating. It's frustrating on our part. It's frustrating on those folks who are applying for these building permits. It's revenues lost. It's money that they're spending that they shouldn't be spending because it's taking so long. And I will say to Ms. Tollett's credit, every time we call and she gets things going and she gets the ball rolling, but we can't always be running to her to say there's a problem. So we need to figure out how that process can kind of move along smoothly, quickly, without us going to Peggy all the time and saying, got to get this done.
Right.
So, thank you. Other than that, it's great.
Thank you.
I look forward to when you come back with all your next steps. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Kiernan.
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Arbuckle, for the presentation. I just have a couple of comments and questions. I was saddened to see there were no area councillors included in the consultation. Back on this slide, it was the regional councillors, because we might have things to add. Having said that,
sorry to interrupt, I believe that there was outreach to every member of council to participate. Those were just the councillors that actually participated.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't receive anything, and if I did, I could have been away, because it literally says regional councillors here. When I read it on Sunday, it was just a little, gave me some dismay.
No, sorry. And that's an error on our
criteria.
Okay.
So reading this report
all
on Sunday.
All councillors were provided with the opportunity to.
Thank you. The stakeholder workshop was held where?
In Caledon East.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. And I wanted to talk a bit.
Gourmandissimo. Sorry, I was trying to remember the name of
it. It was at Gourmandissimo?
Gourmandissimo.
Yeah, very good. I wanted to talk a bit about the transit because you do mention it here, and there are some challenges. It's not within our control. We've got Mayfield Transit that I believe is an integrated transit system with Brampton, and of course Bolton is locked. We don't have that integrated system. So that, you know, is obviously in the works, but it's a challenge to the residents and to the businesses in Bolton. But I wonder, if this is going to surprise everyone, because I'm going to speak about Bolton for a minute, Councillor Groves, is, you know, I actually have been contacted in the last month and a half or so by a few businesses in Bolton and residents in Bolton that are saying that they're barely hanging on, barely hanging on, and are potentially going to be closing again. And that what they're asking for and dying for, and you know, business dying, is residents. We need people. So while I'm 100% for bringing forward the economic development, I know we've got things going on in Ward 1 that I'm looking for some, you know, solid support on, and I want to support the Economic Development Department on this. I'm wondering if some of this, you know, isn't a cart before the horse kind of thing, in that we need to get some of this residences built so that we have people to shop at these businesses that we want to help develop, because it is in no one's interest to assist in development if the people aren't there to shop there, because they just, on a cyclical basis, close, go down, struggle, hang on for dear life. Yes, there are established places that do very well, but I think a lot of the new and moderately new are struggling. I've been in touch with them myself. They've reached out to me. So I have to also say that we need to pursue getting some of this residential development brought forward in Bolton to help support your initiatives. It's a win-win, if you ask me. And anyway, I just wanted to make that comment. So thanks again.
Thank you. Councillor Groves.
Thank you. And Councillor Kieran, you just triggered my memory there on one thing, the transit. Thank you for that. The challenges we're having with transit, I mean, it's the cost. And I know that over the years, Mayor Thompson and some of us around the table, we've talked about a regional transit system. When you look at Viva Transit, it works well. So what are we doing? Are we having any discussion, or would this be part of your strategy to have those conversations with Region of Peel, City of Brampton, to start looking at a regional transit system? Because I think that's something that we could benefit from.
Through the chair, Councillor Groves, I think I would have to defer to Mr. Wong in relation to any discussions in relation to our overall transit feasibility study and where regional transit fits within that discussion.
Okay. Mr. Wong.
Thank you, Chair Innes. Currently, our transit feasibility study talks about our current model at the Region of Peel, which is transit at the local tier. Certainly through the regional governance work and the announcement recently from the province, these are discussions that we can start with our other local municipalities and the Region of Peel.
Yeah, and I think we need to do that, because years ago the region spent a lot of money building that transit hub at Mayfield and Highway 50, and the whole idea was to be able to connect people, and having people, Brampton Transit, York Transit, and everybody else there, because it goes back to your point, Mr. Arbuckle, in there with employers, that they're having difficulties getting people in. I've got, we're having challenges bringing in PSW workers to look after our seniors, and because there is no transit. So, you know, I think that's something that we need to really start having some serious discussion with the Region of Peel to look at a regional transit system, because it'll certainly benefit us. And Councillor Kiernan, thank you for those comments. And I think that you know, that's something that we've been hearing for many, many years in Bolton. So I thank you for raising that and for acknowledging the struggles that businesses are having in Bolton. And it's been like that for years. And you're absolutely right. Those that are there, some of them are just hanging on. I've had people say to me, one of these food places, in one day, for the entire day, they made $35. How does that pay the rent and all the other expenses? It doesn't. Thank you.
Just before I go to the next speaker, I'm just going to follow up on that. And it's something that I'm going to ask you guys to look into, because I would be interested. Because this is something that we talk about often. And we often use Orangeville as an example. Orangeville's population is the same as Bolton. So I would be interested to do a comparison of how many industrial space they have, how many commercial, how many restaurants do they have, and do a comparison to Bolton. Because I don't necessarily think, while residents and needing more shoppers is part of the issue, I don't think that that's all of the issue. Transportation is part of it, that they can't get around, that they can't get employees. But I think that that's a very interesting comparative to look at, because I would say that even our industrial section is actually growing to surpass Orangeville's, and I think that that's a good comparative, because what are they doing to maintain and attract in comparison to what Bolton in particular, even though this is an economic development plan for the entire town-wide, I think that that would actually help shed a light on some of the other issues and concerns that maybe we're not seeing, other than just adding population. I'll leave that with you. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chair. Just to follow up on that, I agree. Although we're getting more population, so that's great, but people aren't necessarily the only answer. I think we have a lot of really good staff in-house that have been really actively helping local businesses through the CBiz initiative. But what I will say, born and raised in Bolton, is that you know, like, there needs to be that initiative to help those business owners with their market analysis, with their business plan. How many cupcake shops do we need in one town of 30,000 people, right? So you have to really, and that's just an example, but ultimately it's not necessarily a people problem, it's a market problem. What's driving the market? What do the residents of Bolton truly need? As Councillor Innes mentioned, Bolton has all the same shops, all the same big boxes as Orangeville does, actually probably maybe less. I live halfway in the middle, so I go in both directions. But ultimately, there's an opportunity to really look at that information and drill down and help those local businesses with their business planning. Oftentimes, there are a lot of great business ideas out there. The problem is, and I can speak from my own personal experience, the business owner isn't always that good at business, right? You know, like, I might be great at baking cupcakes, but maybe I'm not fantastic at business. My husband's really good at laying bricks. He's not great at running the business. I do that. Right, like, that's the difference. So having that in-house experience with our economic development department, I think you have a real opportunity to get out there and push it, and I know that they have been, so we just need to keep doing that.
Councillor Rosa.
Through you, Chair Innes. Thank you very much, Mr. Arbuckle, for your presentation. Very informative. You know, I looked at the support for small businesses, and you know, as I read this report on the weekend, one of the things is, how do we do that? And I can give you some feedback from some of the local businesses who are now evaluating our transit introduction, and they're saying, you know, we needed more stops in front of those businesses along the Highway 50 corridor for them to be able to access local restaurants and shopping and other attractions. So that seems to be a challenge, and I think we need to, moving forward, to revisit that and look at where those stops are and how that transit will support those businesses in town, because some people feel that they're being missed. I also like to thank Councillor Kiernan for her comments. I strongly agree that development is part of the issue as well. And, you know, we haven't had a substantial development in that area for a very long time. So I realize that it continues to be one of the challenges, but I do believe moving forward that this needs to be a priority, and we need to that's one of the ways we're going to support businesses, definitely through the transit, through development, and our commitment to broadband. Thank you.
Councillor Kiernan.
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair. That's a good point. I did forget to mention something, and that is one of the aspects of your report, which obviously gave everyone lots of cause for thought, so very well done. It's tourism. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, a colleague has just mentioned, we do often talk in a negative way about Bolton, about the industrial core, the core on 50. If we don't think it's very nice, why would anyone else want to come here? So I think it would be important, because getting this development and getting these homes built, and we know it's coming, you know, but it takes a long time. The process is slow. So what can we do constructively in the interim? From an economic development perspective, we need to develop solid strategies to move some of this tourism, and that's what Orangeville does well. Okay, Orangeville has a very strong attraction on their tourism side. And I think we need to redirect people to the best of our ability. We need to put more effort into moving people over to that southeast corner of Caledon, shop in Bolton, because that is our largest urban center, and we need to support the businesses there. And housing development takes a long time, and I think in the short time, we could do better. And then it would take some of the burden off our Ward 1, which carries a lot of the tourism burden, most of it, a lot of it. So it could be a win-win, where you've got businesses in Bolton now being supported, and perhaps have our economic development people, who are so good at what they do, when they go out to talk to people. I've never had anyone not say to me how impressed they were and how valuable they found that in that those conversations. To, as Councillor Downey said, work on maybe some business plans and some marketing plans and getting the people out and spending a bit of money, if need be, sorry, Mr. Wong, to get the tourism. And we can do that through external channels. We can get other people to spend their money and do it for us. Very similar to how Orangeville does it. I know Orangeville does a Taste of Headwaters, where you do those different restaurants. And I do go to Orangeville a lot, because I'm halfway between Brampton and Orangeville, and I go to Orangeville. So they do, yep, I certainly do. And so they do those Taste of Orangevilles, where you go and try different restaurants, similar to the Taste of Toronto and the Summer Feast and whatnot. You know, these are things that Bolton could, I don't know, they may try them. But these are ideas that can be brainstormed around a table to start to tangibly assist some of these business owners in Bolton, to show them something they can touch, see, feel, to actually help them build and increase their business and move people on a tourist basis, get them over there. There are some big facilities coming on the corner of Vaughan and whatnot, right on the edge, huge, big, massive training facilities that are going to have a lot of employees. They're going to need houses. They're going to need places to shop. Let's show them that Bolton is that place to shop. We've got the opportunity. We've got the tools. I say let's use them.
Councillor Sinclair.
Thank you. I think a couple of observations I've had of the Bolton dilemma, retail dilemma, and comparing Bolton to Orangeville at doesn't work. Now, Orangeville's out there by itself. So it's Orangeville or Brampton. And from where else you go from Orangeville, I don't know. I was startled once when someone said, oh, well, they were from Shelburne. And where did they think of going for a big box? Barrie. And, of course, it makes sense when you're that far north. But there's Bolton. And if you look at a 30 to 40 minute drive from Bolton, for options for big retail. You've got Upper Canada Mall, Vaughan Mills, the Colossus area down in Vaughan, Woodbine Mall, Bramley City Center, and Trinity Common. Bolton's ring-fenced by huge category killers. And a lot of the people that work in Bolton commute, so they have options. The other way to turn it around is say, yep, there's a big challenge there, but there's over a million people within 30 minutes drive of downtown Bolton. And I think there has to be a different marketing strategy and training in retail in Bolton, that you just don't kick the door open in the morning, but you have to have mutual support among businesses in Bolton. So they reinforce each other and recommend each other. And I think some training about excellence in terms of service, almost a tourism style of training, so that it's a tourist experience. I want to come to Bolton because I get knowledgeable people, friendly people, and they really help. As opposed to the big box mentality that I experienced in Brampton, where, gosh, if you had a stroke there, I'd probably be lying there half an hour before any staff member noticed you, right? It's really impersonal. You've got to be personal. So I see there's constraints on Bolton, there's opportunities in Bolton, and there's some really successful businesses there that the Angus beef guy, and there's a florist, and Garden Foods, and there's probably others that could be named very quickly. But pick those out and start training each other in Bolton. And there's some great stuff, the bakery. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sinclair. And if I ever need a quick ride to Upper Canada in 30 minutes, you're my guy. That's pretty fast. It's amazing. Yeah, from Bolton. That's still pretty fast. Councillor DeBoer.
I've seen you drive, Jennifer. I think you could do it in 25. I think Councillor Sinclair makes some good points. I think one of the pieces that are here, and you got the BIA, and I want to congratulate your staff because they do work hard in this whole field of trying to make things a little bit better economically wise with the CIP and everything. So I want to start with that. But the BIA, I think Councillor Sinclair starts his tip onto something, and that is to bring Bolton to a level where there is more promotion or more ability to promote. And I think one of the things that have started, and I've said it before, is that the BIA really needs to start at Mayfield Road and has to go north to Columbia Way. And if it encompassed that entire area, I think you could have a substantial assessment to be able to start to really promote. And if you can get all the businesses in that area to work together, like Councillor Sinclair suggests, and making it a draw. Councillor Downey made an interesting point, and I know that in Schaumburg they do it, in Rockwood they do it, and that is Santa Claus Parade at night. And the fact that it will be something different, and it brings people in from a lot of different areas. Everybody has a Santa Claus Parade during the day, but it's the one at night that looks and feels a whole lot different. So even something like that. As far as having development and having more houses, we had a presentation by somebody who did a really good job in Bolton looking at another location, and the people that came and spoke didn't want any more houses, but yet it made the most sense to have even more than what he was proposing, because you know that does bring people in and it's within the boundaries. We do have an application, and it needs to be repeated here, is we do have an application before the board for a very large development that would actually satisfy some of the requirements within the village as far as having retail customers. But the other point that has been already made but needs to be reset is that, yes, Orangeville is onto, I don't want to say an island, but they are an area where people go to, whereas Caledon, and we're going to have it in Caledon, we can say Caledon or we can say Bolton, but I think it's Caledon in general, is that we're in an area here where we're going to compete against Vaughan, against Kleinberg, against Orangeville, against Newmarket, against Barrie, because in my corner, I can get to Barrie quicker than I can get to most places in Brampton because the highways are getting faster and the province is doing a wonderful job in sticking new interchanges where I don't even have to go to 9 and 400 anymore. So, you know, it's a different spot, but the comment is perfect. There's over a million people, a couple million people south of us that are within an area to draw. Bring them in. And, you know, we do it for the Badlands. But that's only one little thing that they have a picture at the airport, and it's probably not, it isn't the best thing in Caledon. Not by a stretch, not by a long stretch is it the best thing in Caledon. So, I enjoyed your presentation. I think it's a good starting point. I think there's a lot of people we have to bring on, but we have to change the narrative. And we have to start saying, instead of saying how bad things are, we need to start talking about how good things are. The reality is you can walk around in Bolton at night and feel comfortable. Mind you, you could probably do that in most places in Canada, but we have to promote that. And then you can walk out in the country at Albion Hills, for example, at night and see the stars. And you're, what, half and three-quarters of an hour, 20 minutes, right, Jennifer, from downtown Toronto?
Yep. You're driving like Councillor St. Clair.
So I think we've got a lot to do, and I know you've got a great team and a good leader that's working with. And I enjoyed the presentation and look forward to the things that we can do. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, yes.
Just quickly, Chair Ennis. So it wasn't specifically highlighted in this report, but in our conversations with the consultant on this, it's clear that tourism is going to play a key component in relation to our overall sort of economic development strategy. There's no doubt about that. I think there's also an opportunity, Councillor Kiernan, to your point of we've already started thinking a little bit more about what we may say as the negative impacts of tourism overall, and how can we start to divert some of that tourism, but also how do we promote responsible tourism? Because we also know that it's not necessarily the number of people that are coming, but it's also what they're doing when they're here. So we also want to talk a little bit about how do we start to promote more responsible tourism if they are coming, that they're acting responsible in relation to understanding that there are people that are living here that are impacted by that as well. So we're that's certainly top of mind for us going into 2020.
Thank you. And no other speakers on the board. I will.
It's not on. You know why? Because I went to put the mic on and then.
Go ahead, Councillor Early. Go ahead.
This is a new thing.
Yeah. Thanks. Very chatty crowd this evening. Obviously, your presentation was well received. I don't want to go over the same issues, but there's a couple of things that hit me as people were talking. Number one, this is an economic development report for all of Caledon, and we really had a clear focus this evening on Bolton. And while Bolton really needs some thought and energy put behind the beautification of it, and obviously certainly the independent owners that are in the downtown core, a couple of key items struck me. One is that the BIA really should be full Bolton, not just downtown. I think Councillor DeBoer just said that. That makes a lot of sense to me. And we've got to take a look at how we do something with Bolton to make it a little bit more beautiful, similar to downtown Brampton, where the Christmas lights are on, similar to Orangeville, so that people want to go. It is a difficult task to be an independent business owner. There is nothing easy about it. Garden Foods has been in the business for a very long time. He's done an outstanding, exceptional job. Other individuals have done exceptional jobs. Some have a difficult time with it, to Councillor Downey's point, where business doesn't come that easy. So one of the things I wanted to focus on is your CBiz piece that you've been working hard on, and that's bringing a lot of independents together. I've had the luxury of going to a couple of the evening sessions, and what I've gotten from the independents that have gone there is that just how important it is to have that community and have that culture that they're able to draw from some of their fellow colleagues, which is really, really significant. I think if we want to teach our business owners, that's probably the start of the forum, is where we can bring in guest speakers, or we can sort of kind of do a little bit more of a reach, kind of making these independents understand just how tough that role is and the energy behind it and where it needs to go. It really isn't simply about beautifying, sticking a business up and hoping that it's going to succeed. It's just broader than that. And then the last thing I really want to talk about is tourism and agritourism. And first with tourism, we're very fortunate. We had a beautiful run with Headwaters Tourism Organization. We have disbanded that. We now have it in your department, which I think you can make some headway with. And we shouldn't forget just how important the agricultural business is to Caledon, and just how successful some of these business owners have been. And again, they started small. They put a lot of sweat equity into it, and they built the business up, and year over year, they added things to their portfolio. So I'm very for your department, the economic development strategy, and I think CBiz and really growing CBiz, because I think all of these independent operators really need a community that supports them. So thank you very much.
Okay, now it's my turn. So a few years back, we brought forward the White Belt Visioning Exercise, and I was one of the councillors that brought it forward, and the predominant reason was because we need to make sure that we're planning well into the future to protect the most important lands for investment, the most attractive investment opportunities, to make sure that that ratio, whatever it is, if it's 60-40 or 70-30, and by the way, I'd like to know exactly where we are with that ratio of industrial commercial versus residential, making sure that we have enough space so that optimally when Caledon is built out, that we are financially viable. And I think that that's really key. So I know we're sort of pushed with the GTA West and where that's going to shape, but I think that during our official plan that this is going to play a key role in making sure that we've allocated not only the right amount of lands, but the most attractive lands. Because the businesses aren't going to come if it's not attractive. And so I think that that's really key to make sure that we're financially sustainable for future generations. I know that in the past year or two, working with Mayor Thompson in some of the areas that I represent, we've turned businesses away because we don't have land available. It's not that it's under public ownership. There's not private ownership land that's zoned and shovel-ready to go. And we're losing assessment. They're going to other municipalities. And so I think that we really need to take a very hard, serious look when we're doing the official plan and make this a priority. Because when you're telling big companies, I'm sorry, we don't have the space for you, we're losing those spin-off opportunities. Those smaller businesses and the medium-sized businesses that actually employ more people to support those bigger operations. So I think that we need to do a better job and it's something that the regional councillors need to do as well. When we go back to the region and we're working with a regional official plan, we need to push harder for more industrial commercial employment lands in Caledon so that we're not turning those opportunities away. Because it's really sad when we sit there, and I can tell you there's at least two that I can think of off the top of my head that almost make me want to cry, that we had to tell them no. Because we didn't have enough land ready, and to get them through the planning process, they didn't have that time. So Mayor Thompson saying five. I know of two off the top of my head that crushed me to have to say no to, because it meant other business, not just that assessment. So I think that we really, 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 it was like one of your bottom points. It needs to actually be the top point, especially moving into the official plan. We need to get more land, and it needs to be ready to go. And various types of employment lands. And the other thing to tie into that is the transportation component. And I think that we need to be taking a stronger stance in advocating for things like Bolton Go. We need to be advocating to get more people to and from the community, because those businesses are starving for employees. And I think that you heard that loud and clear from those businesses. I'm just saying the same thing over again, but if there's something that, from a town's perspective, that we can do not only for our public transportation, but tapping into a regional transportation network, tapping into Metrolinx, and tapping into partner municipalities, we should be working with Vaughan far more closely to actually advocate to bring the GO bus or the GO train here. They actually, their population is ready for it. They just can't sustain the end of rail, but we can. So let's partner with them and show them that we're ready to work with them. There was a lot of talk about Bolton, yes. And so there's two areas that I wanted to mention on that. One is there's a big miss in our community, and it's not just in Bolton. It's for the entire town. At some point, this municipality needs to take an action towards moving forward with either a Chamber of Commerce that's going to function and represent this community, or a Board of Trade. Because a lot of the conversation around this table has been tourism, supporting our businesses. And while it's great that economic development is doing that, that is often the primary function of a Chamber of Commerce or a Board of Trade. And I don't know, in my mind, our Chamber of Commerce is defunct. They don't have regular meetings. I don't know who sits on their board. They haven't reached out to us. Do we even pay a membership to them still? I'd like to know that. No.
Nope.
So I think that this municipality needs to be very serious. It's clear that the community is not going to be pushing for it. I know that over the last few years, there was a surge of increase in members going to the Greater Dufferin Area Chamber of Commerce because for insurance reasons, they like to have a membership. So I think that we need to take a more proactive role in working with the Ontario Chamber of Commerce, declaring it done and move on and get something that's actually going to move Caledon forward, and not just Bolton, but all of Caledon, because that is really the purpose of a Chamber of Commerce or a Board of Trade. And I think that that's a really key piece that we're missing. You know, you look at Mississauga's Board of Trade, Brampton's Board of Trade, the Greater Dufferin Chamber of Commerce. They're doing wonderful networking opportunities and business mentoring. That's something else that we could be talking about. You know, if the Garden Foods are successful, let's use Piero Carboni. If the Casamicis are successful, let's use Dino. Like, let's look at these businesses that have been around for a long time, that have built a good base, and let's use them to help mentor some of these other businesses. But I think bringing in a well-run Chamber of Commerce or a Board of Trade whose focus is on improving the business opportunities and investment in the community should be a key initiative of ours as well. And then moving on to, I'm going to spend a little bit more time of downtown Bolton. It's like the chicken and the egg, right? Revitalization is, you know, I look at Bolton and I've done a lot of research in the last couple of years about different small communities and hamlets that have grown and revitalized and become successful. And Bolton has done a lot of the things that they've done. They've created heritage districts. They're looking at architectural guidelines. They're doing all of those things that those communities have done, but it's still not revitalizing. And I think that one of the key things that's really missing is a common shared long-term vision for downtown Bolton, because it's not going to happen overnight. But nobody, you know, if I talk to Councillor Groves what her vision is, it's different from Councillor Rosa's, it's different from Mayor Thompson's, it's different from mine. But what we need to do is all work with the community, find a common vision, and start chipping away at it. It's the only way that it's actually going to happen. And I know that I took Councillor Rosa and Councillor Groves to Old Newmarket. It's amazing. The downtown of Old Newmarket it's very cool. Do you know their Main Street? This year they're starting a pilot program where they're completely shutting the road down. Forget all-day parking. They're shutting the road down. You can't walk down the street, and it's packed. You can't get into a restaurant Wednesday to Sunday. So we need to look at what the vision is, but the thing is, they created a vision. And it wasn't a vision. It's not one size fits all, because Bolton is not Calanese, it's not Terracotta, it's not Alton. So there needs to be a step back on economic development in the sense of, and maybe it's the councillors, maybe it's Councillor Rosa and Councillor Groves and Councillor DeBoer and myself who sit down and say, let's pull the community together, let's create a vision, let's move this forward, let's bring the vision back, because the reality is it's not just economic development, it's also planning, it's also finance and infrastructure, it's almost every department, and at the region too. So I think that as councillors, we need to take a little bit of responsibility about helping our village cores become what they need to be. We need to take leadership roles in helping to create that vision, because it's not fair to go to one department and say, no, you're responsible for all of fixing the downtown Bolton problems, because you can't do it on your own. And we know that. And so that's why we're here, and that's what we want to do. And I think, you know, working behind the scenes to help pull this together is something that we're going to have to do. Because there's going to be budget implications. You know, you look at all of these cities and villages and stuff that have had revitalization. It's river walks and connectivity, and it starts with that. And then it starts with programming of space. And then once you start doing that, the people start coming, and the businesses actually revitalize themselves. So I think that that's something that as councillors and as council that we actually need to work on in better partnership with you to talk about those opportunities and initiatives and how to actually create that vision that we're all going to agree upon, because some or most or all or none may not be here in 3 years. And that vision needs to continue, because it's going to be like a 25, 30-year plan. So I will put that out to you as well. One of the other things is following up on vacant land tax. And I know that we've sent a motion to the region to support it at the region, but I think that we also need to look at if there's other opportunities to ensure that land that is zoned as commercial is actually being redeveloped and used as commercial. So in this case, you know, I look at Caledon East, and there's a beautiful spot right downtown that it just needs to be revitalized so that the rest of the community will follow suit, and it's sitting empty, and he gets a tax exempt. That's not fair, and it's not right, and we shouldn't be giving him one. And in fact, he should be paying more taxes because he's just sitting it, and they're letting the community look the way that it looks. So we need to look at if there's other means that we can move some of those initiatives forward in some of those village cores. They touched on tourism and the mentorship. The one last thing that I wanted to mention was when we're talking about an economic development plan and we're looking into the future and working with official plan, is there been any consideration about specializing business parks or themes? So, for example, Mississauga is the life and sciences hub. Is there an opportunity for us to look, you know, we have a white belt, we have a whole area. Is there a way that we could look at Victoria and say, this would be a great hub for food processing and drive, you know, the food processing into that area? It's diving it a little bit deeper, and I'm just using that as random examples off the top of my head. I'm not saying that that's the best. I'm just saying it would be great if we could look at some of the focuses of what other municipalities, or is there something that we can actually do to support Mississauga's Life and Sciences Hub? Right? We should be looking at what those around us are doing and saying, when we create these parks, could we create a business park that specializes in technology because they're going to have broadband or whatever. So I throw that out at you, just another idea to your pile. And I think that exists on my list, except for now Councillor Groves is on the board.
Thank you. Just to touch on couple of things you said, Councillor Innes, and with regards to the Chamber of Commerce, I know that they've reached out to Mr. Arbuckle and they're looking to try and build a relationship or rebuild the relationship between the Chamber and the town. So I think that that's a step in the right direction, and hopefully we can certainly work with them to try and reestablish or rebuild or whatever it is we need to do to make sure that it does work well and get back on track. And I did put a motion forward a while back, and I think Councillor Innes, you and I did that. You talked about the vacant land, but then I had put a motion about the vacant property because they're also getting a tax break, and I think we're supposed to have a report back, and I don't know where that is, because that's also creating a whole lot of issues for downtown Bolton, where these property owners are just leaving the buildings empty because they're getting a tax break. And I know the region was phasing it out.
Yeah, the break is 2020. Back.
In 2020, yeah. I believe they're phasing it out. So where are we with that?
Through the chair to Councillor Groves. So I believe the intention was, as part of actually this economic development strategy, we'd look at those policies that are essentially either incentives or disincentives for business development and retention. So I think the intention was that we would look for the consultant to provide us with some advice in relation to some of those policies, one of them being the tax exemption.
Yeah, so can you work with the region as well? Because I know that they're looking to phase it out in next year. So it would be good if we can work with them and sort of do the same thing that they're doing, because I think they recognize also that having them sitting there and giving them a tax exemption isn't helping the economy at all. And to your point, Councillor Innes, thank you for taking us through the tour in Newmarket. And I think one of the things that they did, they were thinking outside of the box. And one of the things that the mayor did say to us from Newmarket was, it's a long-term plan, but they've started the plan. And they have, you know, and they're doing that outside of the box thinking. I mean, their square was absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. They've got skating going on there in the wintertime and festivals and all sorts of things happening. So, yeah, and really good restaurants. One of the things that they did do, which I thought was key, is they own properties and they partnered with the private sector. So one of the restaurants right there in the square, the property is owned by the municipality and the private person is running that restaurant. So the municipality is getting rent, and that restaurant is doing very, very well, and it brings a lot of vibrancy, I guess, down in that square. So, you know, those are things that I think we should be doing, is thinking outside of the box and maybe developing more of those partnerships. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. There's no other speakers on the board. Can I have a mover and a seconder for the presentation? Oh, I don't need one. Never mind.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will move to staff report 3.3, 2019-0234, public consultation building code services transformation, that the comments outlined in staff report 2019-0234 related to the province's public consultation on the transportation of building code services be endorsed, and that the comments contained in the report be provided to the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing on behalf of the Town of Caledon. I need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor DeBoer, and this item was held by Mayor Thompson.
I saw the presentation that you have here for the building code, and the question is streamlining the processes, and my question is we're looking at the delivery, we're looking at what needs to be done, but what is it that we can do as council to support the initiatives to move forward? I know digitization, we're trying to look for efficiencies, but on the other hand, I think people have to understand they have to build to the minimum of what the building code's asking for, but is there ways that we can help the building department be able to streamline the process? And I know that's a real challenge, and I guess that's some of the questions that I do have.
Ms. Teller?
Through Chair and Mr. Mayor Thompson, so I don't know if it's assistance in that way, but education and how the building code works. I think people need to understand what the requirements are, what they need to submit. Because a lot of the issues we have is people bring things thinking everything's good, they just submit, and then there's issues with the submission. So it's that education that needs to come up forward, and supporting that would be crucial in bringing forward the building department and actually helping with that transition with the building code. No different than in the planning process is trying to make sure people understand the process. So if a resident has concerns about how something works, by all means, direct them to building staff. We're going to try to – one of the things we did in 2019 was a building review. And out of that building review, it actually talked about some different things that we should be bringing forward to the residents. Some of it's education. Some of it is certain things we can do at the counter to streamline the process, and we'll do that. Part of these comments, some of the things they talk about here are some of the comments staff are supportive of. And so we'll certainly submit those comments to the province on behalf of the town.
My second question now is for staff. What is it that we need to give staff the training to be able to have? We got a lot of young people, and I know we're a training ground, and I think we have to take ownership that we're not going to keep our experienced people here, but what is it that we can train to improve customer service, and especially to know what questions we need to that they need to ask? You know, I'll use one example on a certain site where you have container boxes to store construction equipment. They want to know what you're doing with dry cleaning. It's to know the right questions to ask, and giving the experience. And I know we have young people here, but what is it that we can do to enhance the training or getting out or working with the business sector to understand from their lens so that we all can work cohesively together to deliver a service that we need to do?
So through you, Chair Ennis, I think there's a couple of things we can do there. One, with staff, we have to look at how we retain staff. So building in the industry right now, we're seeing that fluctuation where there is not qualified people out there, and we become a training ground. And so we have to try to educate our staff and then making sure they have the certifications to do their job. That takes time. And I think it's identified even in this public consultation document where there is requirements, but there isn't like courses where you come out of college, university, and you become a building inspector. So there's nothing that streamlines it to that point. So everybody that's coming in has to do those certifications, and it takes time. So I think with building staff and myself, we were looking with HR to figure out what are the ways we can retain our staff. What are the things we can offer staff? Is it education? Is it paying for those courses up front so they don't have to pay for them? Is it offering some flexibility with their work schedules? So by making sure we have the right staff and make sure they're retained, that expertise stays in-house, that helps. But with that rotating door that we have, because the industry is showing that, that is a problem that we have to work on.
Is there any way we can bring some key people in the industry to come in and, you know, share their ideas, whatever, with the new staff, like a half-day workshop of training, so that they have an understanding what's going on out on the site versus, you know, just... Because right now their plan is examiners looking, but they haven't been out to have a look-see. And I mean, like, it goes both ways. But I agree with you. And I do know, listening to other municipalities as well, when I'm out at the HMO level, I know a lot of municipalities have found that they're, especially for the planning side or the building side, they are paying to invest, because they said the payback has been huge. And I was just saying, is that something that we have been doing, or was that something we can look at?
Through Chair Ennis, we do need to do more cross-training for sure, because plans examiners don't necessarily do inspections, and inspections don't see what plan examiners do. But ideally, they should. And we have some that are cross-trained that do both, and seeing, like, we have one that's a plans examiner now that's moving to inspector.
Yes.
And that's great, because those skill sets are different. What's on site is different than what's on paper. And I think when Angie has that full complement, we'll be doing more of that. And just changing the dynamics of the team up there will help with that too.
Well, I'm wondering, even it was interesting, one municipality said made a difference is when the inspector go out, take a new plans examiner that's just started, take them out for a couple of, go out to a couple of sites to see what's taking place, and that gives them a better perspective. And they found the mentoring program within has worked well. So it was, it was good takeaways. But I think going through this session is coming from the province, but I think here's some things that we can learn to capitalize on, how we can just be the best at what we do, and not faulting what we're doing. But I know that this is the challenge. Is we're one of those municipalities, like quite a few others, that we're the training ground. So how do we just acknowledge we're going to be training this, just who we are and where we are, but what can we do to be good at it, I guess is my question going forward. I read this, but I'm just saying it's just something that is in the lens, but it's not there, and that's why I just wanted to bring that up. So thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Sinclair.
Yes, thank you. I am rather surprised at the initiative by this conservative government to set out to set up a special purpose body. This has been a cry of the conservatives for years. Oh, my goodness, special purpose bodies. No one's elected. And who's making the decisions? And yet, here they are suggesting one. And it looks like they're suggesting one because they, the province, are the problem. They haven't kept up their end. And so it's one of those situations where you point a finger and there's three coming back at you. And I thought it was very brave to put in the consultation document, page 19, they say, would it be beneficial that municipalities to have the ability to transfer some or all of their building service delivery to the administrative authority? And, you know, any contact I've had with their building permit inspectors and staff are their top people. But this is a massive liability on the taxpayers of Caledon to have a building department and be responsible for all the buildings. And I'll tell you, if they set this up that we could transfer all of the building services to a special purpose body, we should do it in a second. Absolutely. Get rid of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. All those in favor? Carried. Report 3.5, staff report 2019-0191, disabled road sign policy. That the proposed disabled road sign policy attached to Schedule A to staff report 2019-0191 be approved, and that the general manager of corporate services be delegated the authority to make minor and technical adjustments to the disabled road sign policy as required. Can I have a mover and a seconder? Moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. This item was held by Mayor Thompson, like all other items today.
Well, let's look at it. Today's International Day for Persons with Disabilities, so I think it's a very appropriate that we bring this forward. My question is, as I know we were talking about a couple of site specifics, is there not an opportunity? We've got a lot of general areas. Like, we even have the King Nursing Home. We have a number of places. Is there an opportunity that I welcome this. I think it's great, but I think we're just getting to I like to have this a little broader perspective of where we can capitalize on this.
Ms. Fusco.
Through your chair, Ennis, to Mayor Thompson. So currently the program is staged as a site-specific based on the past practice. We can certainly look at other options. Generally speaking, because of there is no enforcement, it has been done on a more site-specific basis, but that's certainly something that we can look at.
Well, I think here in Calanese, whatever, I would just like to say that this is an opportunity. It's really good to identify. I think people are well aware of it, but I think there's a lot more areas than what's specified. And I'm just, if there's an opportunity to be able to expand this, I would like to have this as a tool that we can do so.
Through Chair Ennis to Mayor Thompson, certainly we could reach out to those industries as well and advise them of this program and certainly work with them to see if there's any interest in applying for a specific sign.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. Just a question on the sign itself. Is that the wording off of other signs in other areas? Because it just, I don't know if it's really, and not really too much of a fan of the specifics. I think the idea of the chain or the top sign, but then having a definition afterwards, I'm just trying to think of where I drove through other communities and trying to remember what they put onto it, but I just wondered if there would be something a little bit less prescriptive as far as the wording is concerned.
Through Chair Ennis to Councillor DeBoer. So the recommendation is to have it site-specific signage because the individual with a disability would be interacting with vehicles differently. So our practice has been the few signs that we have put in place have been specifically to the type of disability. So I believe it's person in wheelchair sign, for example. So it alerts the driver as to how to interact with them as opposed to a blind person area. So they have been specific to the type of disability. To alert drivers to behave differently.
Okay. Thanks.
Councillor Early.
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair. I believe two council sessions ago, the Accessibility Committee drafted a letter and submitted it, and it went back to staff. And I think that letter was basically talking to what you were referring to, Mayor Thompson. It was a bit broader, and they were looking for additional signs. However, there may have been some budget connotations to that. I'm not sure where that letter went. I know we sent it back to staff, and there was going to be some legwork done on that.
Through Chair Ennis to Councillor Early. So I'm only aware of the Accessibility Committee making a recommendation that Council look at a program, but I can certainly reach out to the Chair of the Accessibility Committee to see if she's aware of correspondence looking for a broader scope. But I do know that when staff went to the Accessibility Advisory Committee, they certainly recommended a program, so I can reach back out to the Chair to see about the scope of that program.
Okay. It was, though, part of our General Committee package. That letter was part of the package, mm-hmm. And it actually came through not as a motion, but certainly as it came through as a motion actually from Accessibility Committee, if I'm not mistaken. They tried to get it through into the agenda. So I just think if you refer back, you'll find it. And I'm pretty confident my recollection is that staff was going to take a look at this, and it came up just the other evening in Accessibility again. They were wondering what the outcome of that letter was. Okay, thanks.
Councillor Groves.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I know that our Accessibility Committee looked at it, but did you speak with the Accessibility Committee at the region? Or did you get any input from them at all? Because I think it'd be kind of helpful to get their input as well.
So through Chair Ennis to Councillor Groves, we did reach out to the Accessibility Advisor at the Region of Peel. They do not have a program in-house. They have not, to my knowledge, considered a program like this, but it was passed to their Accessibility Advisory Committee for their discussion and review.
Okay, because I'm on that committee. I haven't seen anything, and I know that the members on the committee would be, I'm sure, and try not not trying to speak for them, but in the discussions we've had, I'm sure that they would be very supportive of this. I attended this morning that inclusion conference this morning for persons with disabilities. It was great. There was some great discussion there. And I think that, you know, I had a resident who requested a sign because his son has some challenges, and thank you, staff, that you were we did put the sign up for them. But I do think that we need to look at it in a broader perspective. Thank you.
Councillor Kiernan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I need to bring something back. I know that back in July, I had made inquiries for a resident as well who requested a sign for his special needs son. I presume, staff, that these kinds of signage would incorporate things of that nature from an accessibility standpoint.
Sorry, can you repeat that? I'm sorry. I was
chatting in class.
I distracted from my bad.
So back in July, I had a conversation with a resident who requested a sign for his special needs son. And Ms. Hall might remember, I probably brought it forward to her as well. So does that mean that going forward with this application that I should be circling back to this resident, that this is something we will be looking at and implementing?
Through Chair Innes to Councillor Kiernan, if Council does support this policy,
yes,
that would be correct, that you could advise the resident there would be an application process. They could submit the application for consideration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorry. And the reason why we were having a little side chat is because I recently had asked the region for a sign on a regional road for children who had hearing impairments. And they did give me some sort of process and protocol that they had. And it was... So I think we should confirm before the next council meeting, and I can forward you the emails that are on my phone right now. Just to make sure that we close that loop through not only the accessibility at the region, but actual transportation department at the region. Seeing no other speakers on the board, moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. All those in favor? Carried. Six point five, staff report 2019-0271, automated speed enforcement implementation, that the automated speed enforcement implementation in Caledon as outlined in staff report 2019-0271 be endorsed, that the town enter into a memorandum of understanding with the region appeal to govern the roles and responsibilities of each level of government in order to implement automated speed enforcement in Caledon, that a copy of this report be forwarded to the Ministry of Transportation, the Ministry of the Attorney General, and the Region of Peel and the Ontario Provincial Police. I need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Mayor Thompson, who's not only holding everything but moving everything, and seconded by Councillor Kiernan. Mayor Thompson.
Okay, so coming back on the thing, and I've read the report, but when it comes to automatic or like what we call photo radar, and it said we can't, you know, I understand red light cameras that maybe don't fit with the police budgets, but this is saving police time to be monitoring in our community safety zones. So I can't see why this can't be part of the police budget to help us with the automated speed enforcement operations. This is basically, it's doing their work.
That's right.
So I'm just saying, I'm moving the report, but I'm really having a hard time getting my head around that. So to me, this is basically robotic police. So it should be part of the police budget, especially the photo radar or what they call the automated police enforcement or speed enforcement cameras. I'm just saying, I think this is just one thing that I understand, because there's so much good stuff in this report, we've got to move it forward. But I want to speak out about this, that I still think going forward, we need to work with the OPP. This needs to be part of their thing, because basically it's helping them find their efficiencies. If we can have these speed enforcement cameras in place, it'll allow the police to be out in the hotspot areas doing the job. And I really think this is part of adding to the complement of the force. So that's where I'm coming back to argue the point. I don't know if
Mr. Wong, did you want to add anything?
Through you, Chair Innes, we can follow up with the OPP and the Region Appeal on this specific point. We did follow up on the red light cameras, but I think the first and foremost, this is for traffic calming and traffic
correct.
Safety, which traditionally is within the region and the local municipalities are the within the jurisdiction of the transportation engineering, traffic engineering divisions.
So just coming back, I just think we just need to follow on this a little more. I think there's more work to be done on that one. Thank you.
Councillor Kiernan. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm starting to chat tonight as much as Mayor Thompson. So I just want to say, yeah, I support what Mayor Thompson's saying on this, and especially coming, you know, from Ward 1, it is a constant source of problems for people. Speeding. The problem is, and I recognize this, is that, yes, there's going to be that other side of the blade, which is going to be the courts and people challenging their tickets. And I can see Ms. Hurd nodding. I mean, I recognize that. But I think that's a risk we're going to have to take and play the odds to say, yes, a percentage will come forward and say, it wasn't me driving that car. Maybe it'll be a deterrent, maybe. But I think it's something tangible we can offer residents to say, see, we're listening, we're trying. Funnily enough, it'll probably some residents will get caught in the trap. That's okay, you know. But we have to recognize that there will be that other side to the knife on this one, that the courts will get bogged down and we will end up with extraneous costs. Having said that, I would support bringing this forward and putting some teeth in this wholeheartedly. So thank you very much. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. It's easy enough to go around it. I know a fella, I was in the passenger seat, and he got a speeding ticket coming out of the airport in Hamburg, Germany, and the picture was good enough that it was actually a picture of the driver, including the license plate in the vehicle. So I think the way around is exactly that technology that's used in Europe. I do believe, though, that the reserve, the OPP reserve, is actually belongs to the town, not the OPP. So I would question whether council wouldn't have the ability to direct funds from that reserve somehow to fund this kind of a program.
Thank you. Moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Kiernan. All those in favor? Carried. We are going to take a 5-minute break before we move into in camera when we come back. To go into confidential session, that Council should go into confidential session under Section 239 of the Municipal Act for the following purposes. Item 3.7, Confidential Staff Report 2019-0281, advice that is subject to solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for that purpose, Bylaw 2008-31, Vibration Bylaw. 3.8, Confidential Staff Report 2019-0282, advice that is subject to solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for that purpose, litigation update regarding the Kingsview Park at Ward 5, and 10.1, Confidential Staff Report 2019-0283, advice that is subject to solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for that purpose, CCRW Youth Centre Expansion Project Litigation Update, Icon Construction Incorporated. Moved by Councillor Downey, seconded by Councillor Groves. All those in favour? Carried. I'll ask all of the members of the public if they could please leave the council chambers. And shut the door. We're now moving into open session, and council entered into confidential session for the following purposes, and following motions are resulting from the confidential session. 3.7, Confidential Staff Report 2019-0281, advice that is subject to solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for that purpose, Bylaw 2008-31, Vibration Bylaw, that a bylaw be enacted, repealing Bylaw number 2008-31, being a bylaw to regulate vibrations. Moved by Councillor Downey, seconded by Councillor Groves. All those in favour? Carried. 3.8, Confidential Staff Report 2019-0282, advice that is subject to solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for that purpose. Litigation update regarding the Kingsview Parkette. The staff be directed to proceed as set out in Confidential Staff Report 2019-0282. Moved by Councillor Rosa, seconded by Councillor Groves. All those in favour? Carried. 10.1, Confidential Staff Report 2019-0283, advice that is subject to solicitor-client privilege, including communications necessary for that purpose. CCRW Youth Center Expansion Project Litigation Update, Icon Construction Incorporated. The staff be authorized to proceed as directed in the Confidential Staff Report 2019-0283, that the external counsel be authorized to execute any necessary documentation on behalf of the town in respect to the litigation as set out in Confidential Staff Report 2019-0283. That staff be authorized to draw up to $150,000 for the external legal and consultant costs related to the litigation from the town's operating contingency reserve, that $526,011.83 be transferred to Capital Project 09-083, Callan Center for Recreation, Wellness, the Youth Center from tax-funded capital contingency reserve so that this project may be fully funded and closed, that any future proceeds from the litigation as outlined in Confidential Staff Report 2019-0283 be returned to the tax funded capital contingency reserve. Moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Rosa. All those in favor? Carried. And that concludes this meeting of General Committee and is now adjourned. Dinner is at 5:30 in the committee room. Too late, already closed. By Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Rosa. All those in favor? Okay. Are there any items of correspondence that members of council wish to hold? Like, for example, the following requests provide presentations at future council meetings: Eco Caledon declaring a climate change emergency and Anthony Hopkins road conditions on Shaws Creek Road north of High Point Side Road. Can I get a mover and a seconder? Moved by Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Councillor Kiernan. All those in favour? Carried. It's now adjourned.